It's time to recap it, and who better to do it than Michael New Magic? Two bros slash pros who cover the highs and lows of racing around the globe on every one of their shows. Real fans look forward to these guys and their last thoughts, cause they know they're not talking out of their royal ascots. What they say makes sense, so ladies and gents, sit back and relax as Blinkers Off presents The Magic Mike Show, where you hear the experts speak. The Magic Mike Show. Tune into the show every week. The Magic Mike Show. You can trust the show is the bomb, because it's being brought to you by RacingDudes.com.
What's up, everybody? I'm Magic.
And I'm Mike.
And this is The Magic Mike Show, episode 311. Mr. Sumich.
Huzzah!
What's your favorite 311 rock band song?
I don't know any of them. I was never a 311 fan.
Me neither. How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. Doing okay. Took a little rough beat last night. I would have liked the Chiefs to hold on, but you know, is what it is. That's part of the game. Gotta just let it go, move along. It was a fun weekend, man. I played the big one. Wish I did a little bit better in there. Made a mistake on the first day. Still ended up finishing pretty good. Was able to get a nice tournament win on Saturday. Had a lot of fun on the ABR stream talking about Woodbine. This was a fun racing weekend, man. I mean, the last couple, we've been talking about like, oh, you know, we're looking forward to this or that. I mean, this Monday show, we got a ton. There's like eight races that were all awesome. There's a bunch of Breeders' Cup implications. We may need to, across the board, lower the North American turf purses so that we keep some of these Euros out of here, because they are just coming here and taking all the money. But it was a fun weekend.
Yeah, it was crazy weekend. So much great racing from you got the East Coast, the middle of the country, California racing. We're just going to pretend it didn't happen this past week until Santa Anita comes back. But then, yeah, lots of great racing at Woodbine. You were on the Champagne and JD podcast, and you and JD went 3-for-4 with the Woodbine picks. That other one, I think you pretty much had to hit the all button to try and get to. But otherwise, you went over and you made a good showing. So I was happy that the Magic Mike extension over on the Champagne JD show continues to do well. You talked also last episode, Mike, about all the big tournaments that you had coming up this weekend. You talked about you got the big one coming up. Lots of big successes in the tournaments, and I was really proud of what I saw on Twitter, and I just really wanted to share it here. This guy right here, Dr. Tang, winning the other all-optional live qualifier for Santa. Oh, wait, Mike, you won something too, didn't you? Well, I'm going to celebrate Dr. Tang because he's not on here to toot his own horn. This made me very happy when you retweeted it. So, of course, I would too as well. But anytime I see that mug right there showing up here, it's a pretty good day. So congrats to him. Congrats to you, too. You had a bit of a bigger tournament win than he did, I think.
Well, he had a nice one, too. He cashed in the big one. He finished 8th, I think it was. So he picked up a Pegasus seat. And then Chris Inman, someone who I talked to quite a bit, he had a big weekend, and he picked up Keelan's seat, too. So on the tournament side, a lot of people in the Magic Mike sphere that are crushing it out there. So it was fun to see it. And Dr. Tang had a heck of a weekend, too.
You love to see it. Mike, before we get into all the craziness that we got going on to talk about this weekend, what's the best thing that you saw?
Man, I was going to roast NFL coaches in this segment because there were some bonehead NFL coaches move. Andy Reid taking the ball out of Mahomes' hands was terrible. You had McCarthy, who literally lets the clock run out and has to kick a 56-yarder with a field goal kicker that missed a chip shot and an extra point last week. But then there was what the Texans' new coach did. Did you see this?
No.
Oh, my God. This is epic. So the Texans' new head coach, rookie head coach, David Culley. First, it's in the second quarter. The game's tied at 7, okay? And they have 3rd and 15. They pick up 13 yards, so that leaves a 4th and 2. But Cleveland jumps off sides. So he has two options. He can either take the 3rd and 10 and try and get a first down, or the 4th and 2. And you assume if you accept the penalty, 4th and 2, you're going to go for it since you're right around midfield, 7-7 game. You're the underdog. He accepts the penalty. Or I'm sorry, he declines the penalty, sets up the 4th and 2. And punts, just gives the ball away. It's Stefanski, who's the Browns coach. Like, literally, he's just like, what the hell is going on? How, if you're going to accept the penalty, you go for it on third and 10. If you decline it, you're going for it on fourth and 2. You're not like, hey, no, don't worry about that penalty. We're just going to give you the ball back.
We wanted to guarantee we were going to kick the punt it into the end zone and guarantee a touchback. That's what we're trying to do.
That's the best part. He's like, I was going for field position. They totally kick it in the end zone. So it was a net 30-yard punt. I will give him credit for this, though. After the game, he's like, I messed up. I should have accepted the penalty and gone for the third and 10 or gone for fourth and 2. That was my bad. That was a mistake. So I give him credit for like owning the mistake. But, oh, man, that was a decision.
That, my goodness. I can't believe
anyway, that's not the best thing I saw.
Oh,
that's my fun roasting thing.
Okay.
The other thing I love about the NFL season is the crazy parlays. And there is one that is currently live. Okay. So a guy signed up on BetMGM and got their $25 bonus. And he bet a $25 16-team money line parlay every single game this weekend. He's live going into Monday night. So a $25 free parlay to pay $726,959 is live to your Lions.
Oh, good Lord.
So this and you know, like if you're betting a $25 free bet, you're not rolling in money. So it's not like you can pull 100 grand out to cover bet this thing either, or hedge it in any way. So somebody's got $559,000 or $759,000 on the Lions tonight, plus 400 to close out a monster parlay. But like, I remember when I was betting $25 on a game, I did not have the kind of money to hedge that bet. Like you can't even cash it out because it was a free bet. So like a lot of these places let you cash out your parlay when you're 15 for 16. Free bets don't count. So he's got to roll with the Lions tonight or like hit up his parents and borrow a couple hundred thousand to try and see if he can get a cover bet down.
It's too much pressure. I feel like I need to take my Lions jersey off because there's too much pressure happening. We're playing Monday Night Football, which I'm very sorry to everybody that was playing to watch Monday Night Football tonight. I'm very sorry to – well, no, I'm not sorry to that guy because that's stupid. You made it all the way through 15 games, fine, and then you picked the Lions money line against the Packers. On Monday Night Football, no.
I mean, you got through that Cowboys game. You get through the Titans game with that ridiculous overtime win. You've got the Ravens on Sunday night. Like, just some wild luck to get there. But now you have $750,000 on the Lions money line.
Wow. Impressive. Well, now I have an actual legitimate reason to watch because I don't like to hate watch the Lions anymore. It just kind of hurts the soul.
Vikings kicker. That's a good call too. Missing that field goal. It's like eight things had to go right in this parlay.
What is with Vikings kickers missing field goals when it really matters? At least Brett Favre wasn't responsible for what happened. Who will lose tonight, Lions or Rodgers' attitude? Rodgers is probably going to be playing really Aaron Rodgers won't let the Lions beat him. He'll play pissed off and mad. But he won't let the Lions beat him. That's like that's a special kind of thing that you just don't let happen.
So the Vikings announcer is PA on the mic, Paul Allen, who also calls Canterbury. Really entertaining race caller. Love Paul Allen. I think he had some money line Minnesota bets in. Because if you hear the call of the missed field goal, he's like, and they make it, it's good. And then like the color guy's like, he missed. And just the sadness that runs into his voice. It was absolutely hilarious. So go watch the Vikings miss that field goal with Paul Allen's call. And it's a pretty good one.
Best thing that I saw, Mike, the Detroit Red Wings hockey is back in action, kind of. Started up a little bit up in northern Michigan, Traverse City. They had the prospects tournament. So all of their prospects from training camp took on teams from Columbus, Dallas, St. Louis. And I was very excited because that first game against Dallas, they got out to a 5-1 lead, almost lost it. They almost coughed it up 5-4. But it was exciting because it was Red Wings hockey. It's all the future stars. And that first game, I'm like, God, like in 5 years, this team is – we're going to be the best team in the league if half these guys develop it, how they look. And I'm excited because I'm like, my son is coming into a world where the Red Wings are one of the worst teams in the league. But by the time he's aware of what's happening, they'll be one of the best, which is what happened with me. I'm so very happy about it all. And then the second game happened, and we played St. Louis Blues, and I went, oh, yeah, that's right. We're the Detroit Red Wings. Not only did they lose, we lost three guys to injury. Your guys were – admittedly, I'll say they were a little dirty, but they just came out with a lot of fire and tenacity. And Detroit was just – they looked scared the whole game. And then they got their asses beat. Our first-round draft pick, goalie, was in net. He got lit up. He looked like he was 17 or 18 playing a bunch of men. So brought me back down to earth a little bit, but it was still really fun to get to watch some Red Wings hockey-ish. And then we got training camp, official training camp starting up soon, and then the season.
Yeah, I mean, we got waxed by Dallas today. So there's a nice little cycle going there if you're looking at it this way. It's going to be nice to have hockey back. I love some hockey. I love sports, man, but I can't get into baseball. I'm not a big basketball guy. So it's great to have football, great to have hockey. Looking forward to having it back.
Great to have a lot of horse racing action to talk about. Let's get into it, Mike. Riders up. Says Detroit needs something positive in sports, trust the process. Mike, last week on Thursday, you and I tackled the late pick four sequence at Churchill Downs, which had three stakes races that we're going to talk about here. You, my friend, you gave out the winning ticket. Wasn't a huge hit, but you gave it out for a low price. You predicted it was going to be a little chalky. You pressed your opinions when it mattered. We'll get to that in a minute. Starting things off was race eight. This was the grade three $300,000 Pocahontas Stakes. Juvenile Fillies, this is Breeders' Cup winning for the Juvenile Fillies race. Hidden Connection, horse that you and I both love. She was coming out of a Colonial Downs sprint. We didn't really know what she beat. Colonial Downs, it's not exactly Saratoga of Virginia. This horse backed up that really impressive win with another monster effort here. She ended up being the 9-5 favorite, so the price that we were hoping we might get on her disappeared. But what did you think about Hidden Connection here?
Oh, well, when the price disappeared, I knew this horse was a runner. I mean, that was one of those giveaways. It was nice to see Reilu get this win. She looked dominant in this race. I mean, she absolutely just ran away from this field, never really that close. I think this is a horse you got to respect moving forward. I mean, you got to think she's going to be in the Breeders' Cup. We're going to see her there. And I don't think that she's one that you just kind of throw it out. You know what I mean? I think this horse proved that she's pretty awesome. I thought it was pretty funny that after the race, then the amount of calls that ownership group and Brett Calhoun is going to get about changing riders will be interesting. I'm going to be interested to see who ends up showing up on this horse. Hopefully Reilu gets to stay aboard. We see what happens, but this is a horse that I do not think you can just chuck out when we were talking Breeders' Cup.
I'm with you. And the one burning question I have for you out of this race, did Hidden Connection do enough to become your new top choice in the division right now?
Oh, no,
it's tough because we have so many more races. The juvenile races are very tough to have a surefire pick right now.
Yeah, no, because I don't think this field was great. I mean, that's probably my biggest knock is that, you know, On the Ones and Twos was my other must-use horse here, didn't run that well. We now have like multiple efforts from On the Ones and Twos that don't validate her. You have Mama Rita run second in here, or Mama Rina run second in here. It's a 12-1 Kenny McPeak who'd never touched the dirt before. I mean, so it's just like, I'm not sure that there was that much behind her. She absolutely aired the field. You cannot take anything away from her because of who she beat. But it definitely makes it's hard for me to say that she is the best horse or the favorite in this race, in the race or the division, without knowing what's behind her here.
Before we do move on, I would just like to bring up the fact that you and Aaron both made fun of me for one of the horses that I played in this race. I believe it was a horse exiting Ellis Park race with Brian Hernandez Jr. riding for Kenny McPeak at 30-1. Mama Rina comes in second. Can you at least admit that was not a bad play for me? She wasn't better than Hidden Connection. Nobody was, but she was better than the rest of those mules.
No, I won't admit it.
30-1, that was a good play.
She never looked like a winner, though.
That's true. That was an entire stumble bunny effort for her to get up there. She was fifth when she disappeared off the screen when they focused on Hidden Connection. I couldn't believe she got second.
Well, and that goes back to what did we beat here, right? And that's like, this looks wildly impressive on paper, winning by nine, absolutely airing this field. But like, even Goddess of Fire, who ends up running third year, I'm not sure how good Goddess of Fire is, that there wasn't much that came out of that maiden score at Saratoga. So like, we need to see what happens with all these horses moving forward and figure it out. But an 87 buyer is nothing to laugh at early in a 2-year-old season for a filly.
Especially if when she has already has an 82, 84 buyer on the page. A lot of times you see the juveniles, when they hit the 80s and the 90s first out, they don't usually back it up. This one actually improves as she stretched out to two turns, which I think is worth noting. You and I both used her. I was alive to her twice because the 11 scratched in the paddock. We'll move on to the second leg here. Major General, this is a horse. This is where I got knocked off, Mike, and I'm very pissed at myself about it. We'll talk about that in a second. We all thought Stellar Tap was the goods. He was bet down to even money favoritism. And when it came time to run, he spit up the bit pretty bad. Didn't go through with it. Major General ends up getting the win by a neck over Tough to Tame, a 37-1 long shot. Fire didn't come back super strong. Time didn't come back all that fast. The one burning question is, Major General a legitimate threat?
No. Major General, they were slower than the Phillies.
Yeah.
They came home at 144 versus 143 for the Phillies. So, no, I don't think Major General is a legit threat. Although I will say this, I you made fun of me a little bit for using three favorites here and then going and playing one price. I'm not upset I did it. Let me tell you that. Like, I just wasn't that big of a believer in Stiller Tapp. I thought this was a good spot to spread a little bit. I did think it was the most likely winner. I did not think Stiller Tapp would go off at even money. I didn't think we were getting 3-1, but I didn't think it was going to go off at even money either.
So here's my my notes from when I was making up the ticket for race 9. You see right there, it says 6-7 .. 8 would have been in if I scratched. That 7 is written over an 8. I was 6-8 on this race when I originally handicapped it. I would have hit this with you if I hadn't talked myself out of it. And it's because of what you said. I was afraid that this horse was going to take a lot of money. I was guessing 3-1. I texted you after the race. I was like, if I knew the horse was going to be 9-2, I probably would have used him. Out of this race, is there anything that you'd like to take, including the horse that I use with Stellar Tap, Red Knobs, who hits the board at a price as well, got third. Again, didn't look like a winner, but I'm hitting the board with my long shots.
Yeah, I mean, if you're playing tries, you're crushing. Not really. I think this the one thing I will say is everyone needs to remember the Constitution's a really good sire. So, every time you have these second crop sires, sometimes you forget about how much you love a sire in the first crop and how well they did. This is a second Constitution crop, and he is still out there crushing it. So, as awesome as all these first time sires have been, and there have been some really awesome ones, don't forget about Constitution.
Also out of an Uncle Mo mare, so there's the win early potential, and then it's Todd Pletcher training. The third start of the layoff will either be, I don't know. It's mid-September. I think you wait to the Breeders' Cup with this horse, right? So would you go to the Breeders' Futurity, or do you just wait for the Breeders' Cup at this point?
You're getting pretty close to just going to the Breeders' Cup. I mean, especially with a two-year-old where you're like, how much does the horse have in him? Do I want to put it through four races? Like, there's a lot of questions about kind of how you set up, and we know Pletcher loves the third race fire. That would be the Breeders' Cup with this horse. So I would expect that the next time we see Major General is going to be in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
One spot, Mike, where you expertly pressed your opinion in the pick four was the next race, the Grade 3 Locust Grove Stakes. She Dares the Devil, 4-5 favorite on the morning line, 3-5 favorite going off, very deserving favorite. She's now perfect after 5 starts at Churchill Downs. The only time she's lost this year, Mike, was to Latruska in the Ogden Phipps earlier in the year. Latruska has continued to run strong. She's training up to the distaff, and that's where She Dares the Devil is pointed. Even though this wasn't an official Breeders' Cup win in your end, that's where she's going. So my question for you out of this race, can She Dares the Devil turn the tables on Latruska?
Sure, if anything's possible. Will she? I don't know. I mean, look, She Dares the Devil absolutely loves this racetrack. So let's start there. I mean, this is kind of your classic horse for a course here. This was one of those that we pressed at $3.20. So not too proud of the press here. It's kind of one of those where you kind of just have to kind of accept it at some point. But this, you know, She Dares the Devil has made over now $1.3 million at Churchill out of her 2.1 career earnings. So absolutely loves Churchill Downs, now 5-5. Guess what? Breeders' Cup's not at Churchill Downs. Breeders' Cup is out at Del Mar. To me, it's one of those races where, like, she ran great. That's awesome. She's won in other places. Don't get me wrong. We run the Grade 2 Azari at Oaklawn Park. So not going to knock her saying that she can't win anywhere else. But her one race at Del Mar was in the Grade 2 Serenado, where she got absolutely lit up. So I have a little concern about whether or not she can run at Del Mar.
Yeah, as Mark says, She Dares the Devil won at Del Mar. It didn't beat much. It's worth noting. She can handle the track. But I guess when it comes to Latruska and Gamine, if you've watched the Monday shows or listen.
Oh, yeah.
She did. Yeah, she with the Clement Hirsch. But yep. The point I keep bringing up with these is Latruska and Gamine are really seeming right now like very solid locks. And so I keep asking Mike, this horse could beat her? This horse could beat her? So that's it's not me thinking that necessarily that they're going to get beat. Is we're just trying to, you know, figure out if there are ways in which they can get beat. We'll keep looking for them.
I will say this before we go on. Latruska is much more likely to get beat than Gamine. Because someone may decide to go with Latruska. And if you do that, someone may be able to catch her. She was huffing some serious wind down the stretch at Saratoga last time out. And there were multiple horses in that race with a little better trip, so I think would have beaten her. So I do think Latruska is beatable. Gamine is, to me, the much more safer single. She's also going to be singled like crazy. And beating those two horses will be keys to getting massive will pays, unless we get some, you know, bombs like we did last year in the mile, turf mile.
Well, massive will pays aren't exactly what we saw at Woodbine this past weekend, Mike. A couple of couple of good horses, bred by Godolphin, trained by Charlie Appleby, ridden by Frankie Dettori, showed up at Woodbine over the weekend, starting with Walton Street in the Grade 1 Canadian International Stakes. This horse, Mike, I didn't at first when I watched this, I was like, okay, he tracked in second. There was a runaway early leader, Primo Touch, who came, still finished third, so was the field really that good? I don't know if the field was really that good, Mike, but for that horse to come home in sub-24 as easily as he did in the stretch, I thought Walton Street was pretty damn impressive. Earns a 110 buyer. Earlier on Saturday's card at Belmont Park, we got to see Yabir, I'm going to say his name, as winning the Jockey Club Derby. Also, Godolphin, Charlie Appleby. So he's looking very set up, the Charlie Appleby barn, for the Breeders' Cup Turf. My one burning question, did either Yabir or Walton Street become your new top pick after this weekend?
I don't know about top pick. I thought Walton Street looked dominant in this race. I mean, it won for fun, never really asked, was flying home late. And it's not like they walked like 49 for a first half mile, going a mile and a half is not slow. I mean, it's not like they're going 52, 115 like we were in the Mr. D Stakes. So I thought Walton Street was really, really impressive in this spot. It was a second off the layoff. It'd be interesting to see what happens here. But like, how often do you see 20 sub 23 when they're actually running like somewhere near 24s multiple times that running line? When you look at those breakdowns, you have two 24s and you have that 23. It's not like they were crawling along the whole way. So I thought this was a really impressive performance from Walton Street. And don't forget, Desert Encounters won this race twice and loves the racetrack. So the horse that runs second, who, by the way, lost to, who was it last time they lost? Desert Encounter lost to...
It was overseas. I'm going to look at it.
Tanoa, who just beat Snowfall.
Yeah.
So it's not like Desert Encounter is facing some terrible horses there over in Europe either. And you have Adaya all in the back class for Desert Encounter. So Desert Encounter is a real horse. And Walton Street made it look like a mule. That tells you something.
What about over at Belmont Park? Yabir, I thought he was a pretty easy winner of that race. As soon as he was given the green light and tipped out, he was gone in an instant. He's a three-year-old, so it's going to be harder for him facing these horses in the Breeders' Cup when he's facing the older horses. Is Domestic Spending a top pick for you right now? Where are you leaning when it comes to the turf?
I would lean toward Domestic Spending. I mean, when you go back and you watch that Mr. D Stakes where he lost, look, that was one of those races where pace made the race, and he ran a really good race. I think that's kind of lost in everything. Yeah, I got beat, got upset by a Monster Price, but ran a really good race. You look, I think it was like sub-23 that horse came home in that race. I mean, I think Domestic Spending is still the goods, and you're going to have more pace on here. I will say the other thing about Walton Street that's interesting to me, one of the very few European horses that wants the lead or to be close to the lead, I think that might make a difference come Breeders' Cup. So I do like Walton Street quite a bit there. Yabir, like, look, the horse ran really well. I think that You saw him absolutely crush this field, face Ottoman Empire, two backs, pretty good horse. To me, I mean, Beaujolais Ballet is the one that was really disappointing in the whole day, right? I mean, I ended up not playing Beaujolais Ballet at all. But after seeing what Santa Barbara did, you're kind of worried. We'll see what Beaujolais Ballet comes back with. Just empty here. I think that, to me, the best, most impressive horse was Walton Street. Yabir is up there, but I'd still take Domestic Spending in this division.
I'm with you, and we actually got some Domestic Spending questions come in. I'll throw up for you. Mark wants to know, are you concerned about him going 12 furlongs, mile and a half, with the kick that he has?
No. I don't think he is distance compromised. He's definitely could be trip compromised, but I don't think distance compromised. So we'll see if he – I'm not worried about the distance. I'm worried more about the trip.
And then the next two are kind of tied in together. Nick Feldman asked, will he be the favorite at post time? And Chris Myall asked, what price would you want on him to play him?
I'm going to go with no. I don't think he'll be the favorite because of all these European horses are coming in. And there's a clear narrative right now being set up that the U.S. cannot compete with the European horses, mm-hmm. especially on the turf. So I think that you're going to actually get like 3-1 on Domestic Spending. And I would probably be interested in Domestic Spending at 3-1, 7-2, somewhere in there. I am not interested in Domestic Spending as a favorite. So let me if the morning line comes out and you're seeing like 9-5, 2-1, and you're seeing some euros at 5-2, 3-1, and you know you start looking at the doubles from one day to the other, and Domestic Spending is a favorite there, then I may start kind of making some adjustments. And this is one of those where I'm going to be looking at the doubles to see who I think is going to be the favorite when I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do for BCBC.
I cannot wait to see what John White does with the morning line for the Breeders' Cup turf, because nobody in the business is better, in my opinion, than John White at setting a morning line, and he's going to go look at overseas to see what the odds are trading at, which is something you do a lot, Mike, when you're looking for value. So I'd be real curious to see what happens there. Griffin says, like, the jersey. Hey, listen, I hope you were on earlier, Griffin, where Mike was talking about that guy who alive to 700, what was it, 720,000 plus?
$759,000 to the Lions. On a free $25 bet.
Oh, my goodness. Best $25 that casino's probably ever spent. Mike, not the only big Breeders' Cup race. Actually, the official winning you're in on Saturday at Woodbine was the Woodbine Mile, and a horse that you gave out on the Champagne and JD podcast, also on the ABR live show, the live stream Saturday covering Woodbine. You like Town Cruise, especially when he was trading off the 20-1 morning line. He was 22-1 with about 30 seconds to post. Breaks out of the gate 8.5-1, takes some gate to wire. I think somebody knew, somebody was listening to Mike Somich on the ABR live show, put down some shekels on this horse. Do you think this horse or anyone out of this race has a shot in hell in the Breeders' Cup Mile?
No. And before we move on real quick, just FYI, domestic spending currently 7-1 in the Breeders'. Oh, that's the Breeders' Cup Mile. He's going to be in the Breeders' Cup Turf. He's 6-1 in the Breeders' Cup Turf with Tanawa.
Take my money.
6-1 right now. Mistriff, Tanawa, and St. Mark's Basilica, all shorter prices than him at 4 or 4.5-1. This was one of those classic. And I'm not like, look, JD also had this horse. I was on the ABR live feed. All four of us mentioned this horse. And Go Philly, who joined us from the track, also mentioned this horse. This was just one of those situations where pace made the race. And there was one horse in this race that had shown speed, Town Cruise. Went 22 and change, 45 and change last time, and lost by, I think it was a length and a half to Olympic Runner. Got to go 24-47 a day. When I saw that 24 up, I'm like, oh, this is over. The main threat here was whether or not the 6 Change of Control coming out of sprints was going to go. And Change of Control kind of went, but this is why we talk about inside speed all the time. As soon as Town Cruise kind of forcefully took that rail, jockey's tendency is to back off because you don't want to try go too wide passing someone around the turn. You want to start saving ground, sit back. Town Cruise used that inside speed, was able to get to the lead, got that 24-second first quarter, 2 seconds slower when they only caught him by a length last time out, and it was over. Never looked back.
I think the biggest takeaway from me, great job breaking that down. The biggest takeaway from me, we just talked about domestic spending. Who was fourth in the Mr. D Stakes? It was Space Traveler. And Space Traveler cuts back to a mile and comes running late. Becks up running fourth in the Mr. D, which was won by a gate-to-wire horse, kind of similar to this. So just building off of that, as far as the Breeders' Cup goes, Raging Bull's going to get third. I saw someone in the comments up here say that the key to them having a good weekend was keying him in third in a try. Very smart play.
I saw that ticket. That was good.
Where is it? I had it. There it is. Oh, it was Nick Feldman. There you go. Nice. Of course it was Nick. Nick's very sharp. Yeah, that's great. As far as this race goes, Breeders' Cup-wise, Town Cruise, they actually said in the winner's circle because he's not nominated. They asked if they're nominated to go to San Diego, and they go, yeah, we don't think he's going to like it. Like in the winner's circle. You just won $1 million grade one race with a homebred from a barn that has had 8 starters this entire year, has 4 wins, and they immediately just go, Nah, we're good. We're not going to the Breeders' Cup.
Do you know how much that would cost them, though? What's the turf mile is what? $1 million purse or is it 2?
Well, if you're not nominated,
it's 10%.
Is it only? I thought it was a flat $200,000 to be nominated late, no matter what. It's a lot of money. Is the point you're trying to make?
Yes, yeah, and if when you break it down like you did for a small barn, that's not you don't have those kind of shackles. It's like a guy betting a $25 free parlay bet, right? They don't have a couple hundred thousand to cover it. Not a small supplemental fee. So, and let's be honest again, Town Cruise won this because of the pace. Town Cruise going to Del Mar is not getting away with 24 seconds on the front end. That is not happening in the turf mile. So
that's not happening in the turf. They're not going to go that slow in the turf.
So there is zero chance that you end up wanting to send Town Cruise there in my mind. I'm proud of myself. I didn't use Raging Bull. I correctly predicted Raging Bull for the first time in like 6 races. So yay. I think I kind of like him in the Breeders' Cup though.
I mean, if Frankie Dettori with the weekend he just had at Woodbine can't win on Raging Bull at Woodbine, there's no hope.
I'm a Raging Bull homer in some cases, although I did fade him again this weekend. Look at the running line. Okay. We got the running line up here. 6th, 8th, 9th, dead last entering the stretch. Third misses by two lengths. That the only horse to close into this slow pace was Raging Bull. I don't think this was a bad race by Raging Bull. I think this is actually a sneaky good race by Raging Bull, considering how everything played out. And I hope, like, look, if I'm a sucker, man. You give me 10-1 on Raging Bull, 12-1 on Raging Bull on race day. He's a tournament used to me. I may have a couple little win bets on him too.
Well, on that point, the Palace Pier Griffin's reporting is the 185. Was that about three? I can't do math. $1.85 favorite in the Breeders' Cup Mile. I should take Mo Forza, but good God, Palace Pier is a monster. He's a special kind of monster.
Yeah, you can get Mo Forza at 9-1 right now. Palace Pier should be the favorite. Here's the problem with betting plus 185 2 months out. You're locking up your money for too long, and you don't know enough about whether or not the horse is going to be in the race. So to me, that's the, like, I hate playing the favorites when I'm looking for these, unless I think it's like someone, like I had a nice sizable chunk on Monomoy Girl last year, but I knew she was going to be there, and I knew she was going off way shorter than what I could get her at. And so I took her, I think it was a month out.
2-1, right?
Yeah, I had Monomoy Girl 2-1 a month out. So, and we talked about it on the show, so hopefully a couple other people had it as well. This is one of those where I don't know enough about the European turf trainers and owners to know whether or not they're coming over here. So that's why 185 scares me a little bit. If I wanted to do something, I'd take a little bit more of a shot. Mo Forza 9-1, loves the course, someone like that. But to me, it's tough to play 185 early.
Especially with Peter Miller training, which, by the way, Mo Forza flagged, they're doing the out of competition testing. And Mo Forza tested positive back in June, early July, as he was working back towards his big return to the Del Mar Mile. Tested positive for drugs. So, yeah, there you go. Peter Miller using the drugs to get the horses ready. So,
He wasn't even ready, remember? That was a 90% cranked Mo Forza. What's going to happen for Breeders' Cup?
Yeah, he said afterwards, I was really nervous. I didn't think he was 80% ready. Well, Peter Miller.
Yeah. Didn't have the good stuff.
Mike, we'll head over back to Woodbine for Sunday's racing because there's two very important races that happen. We'll first start with the Grade 1 and Natalma Stakes for two-year-old fillies going a one-turn mile on the turf. Wild Beauty, Frankie Dettori, Charlie Appleby, Go Dolphin. They had themselves a weekend and it continued Sunday starting with Wild Beauty here. This was a pretty great effort. We don't really know much about the juvenile fillies turf division yet in America. Usually one big round of preps happen in October. So with that in mind, Mike, is Wild Beauty the clubhouse division leader?
Yeah. Yeah. That was, look, man, these two horses were impressive that came over from Europe. This is one of, I made that joke at the opening where we might have to lower the purses to keep them away. Wild Beauty looked dominant, missed the break. I had to go wide. Just everything went wrong and everything went right in the stretch. I mean, that was a very, very impressive performance. I will say, I did stable up. This isn't going to be my stable up horse, but I kind of like Ready Lady coming back. Horse ends up running, what is it, 7th, 8th. But if you watch the trip, the horse had run on the rail, got absolutely no room. And then when Emma Jean Wilson tried to start pumping on the horse, it just didn't respond behind horses, never really got clear in the stretch. Then she just wrapped the horse up. So I have a little bit of interest in Ready Lady moving forward, not against Grade 1 company, but I do think like it could be a sneaky play in the allowance level.
Ready Lady is a half-sister to Lady Spite Spear, who won this race last year for the same connections. So lots of talent in this family. Also, she has I guess in human terms, it's her cousin. It's her dam's sister's son was racing in the Summer Stakes, which we'll talk about in a minute. But anyways, my point is that's a great horse. I do have my stable up section because we have this new stable up feature that we're doing. So I'm going to say that the horse that you want to stable up from this weekend is going to be the third place horse here, Eminent Victor. This is a... Jared Welch did a perfect job on Blinkers Off last week breaking down what's crazy about this horse and why I bet her in this race. It's a daughter of Mr. Z who debuts at Arlington Park at 39-1, wins for fun sprinting on the synthetic. She gets privately sold and sent to Chad Brown, who immediately sends her to a Grade 1 turf race and gets Flavian Pratt to take the only ride of the day on this horse. Everything lined up that this horse should probably be a monster despite how she came into the world and how she debuted. I thought she gave a great effort here. This was a race that was pretty dominated by the closers. No one was beating Wild Beauty in this race, but I thought that she gave a really great effort here. Pizza Bianca was a Clamont or Chukwagehi horse. I think it was Clamont. I can check her here.
Yeah, it's Clamont.
Who had a very impressive Saratoga debut winner on turf going two turns. So she had the experience edge, as she had the surface edge. I think that just as much as Pizza Bianca has a big future, so does Eminent Victor.
Yeah, I would agree with this. And I was really surprised where Eminent Victor was this entire race. I think it's important to note that Chad Brown added blinkers off a sprinting win in the synthetic, and the horse was eighth early. So I was pretty surprised that a horse that had a 1:17 time form was that far back. Didn't look like she missed the break, but she definitely wasn't quite as fast as what you would expect in this spot. So
She got hit back. The horses on either side pushed her back.
So I'm pretty surprised she was that far back. I think that you do have a pretty good future here from Eminent Victor. I think we need a couple here. She was probably the second best horse in this race. She had no chance against Wild Beauty. She could have run her A++ game and lost by 2 lengths to Wild Beauty. So let's make sure we set that straight. But she's a stakes winner for Chad Brown in the future.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that one. Jared pretty said as much on the show on Blinkers Off last week, which has really caught my attention. Before we move on, Nick Feldman says, it's the Philly Mare's turf, the Breeders' Cup going to be what distance? It's 1 1/8 is what it was when they held it there in 2017. So I would guess that they're going to do 1 1/8. The problem is Del Mar has got a shorter stretch, tighter turns in the turf course. So the distances they can't always manage to get with. That's why they only sprint 5 furlongs there. There was one other one. Oh, Nick also asked, would you rather have a horse cutting back in distance or extending out in distance? Talking about the Breeders' Cup Turf Mile, but we can talk about it with this race going forward as well.
This race being well, just in general.
Just from in my, general, yeah.
From, if it's a two-year-old, I want him stretching out. Yeah, I think that, like, especially if it's a track that favors speed, like, so if we're talking about Del Mar, a horse that wins at 6.5 at Kentucky Downs is awfully interesting to me at Del Mar if they showed speed there, because that's a horse that is going to be able to be quick, be on the lead, and those, like Magic just mentioned, short stretch, tight turns, all of those favor speed horses. So I think stretching out to me is a lot more interesting. You also like rarely see a horse debut at 1 1/16 and cut back to 1 mile for a stakes race. Usually they want to run them a little bit shorter just because miles usually have a little quicker pace. If you debut 1 1/16, it's around 2 turns, which is tough to do. Usually you see them stretch them out a little bit more, or stay at that 1 1/16 distance. So in two-year-old races that are stakes races, I'm looking for horses that are generally stretching out, not cutting back.
And then when it goes to, I agree with you on that. And when it comes to the turf mile for the older horses, looking at that one, which is 2 turns at Del Mar, I'm looking for horses cutting back from 1 1/16, maybe 1 1/8. Horses that will sharpen up by cutting back to 1 mile, because I think the horse is trying to stretch out. They're going to struggle when they're in that race. What do you think?
I think it's horse dependent. I think you got to really just look at like what mile races the horses run. Cause in some instances, like I liked, we're going to talk about the next race. I liked the four horse. I can't remember the horse's name right now. Ride a Comet, because Ride a Comet was coming out of two longer races, but it struggles over 1 mile, and Ride a Comet has done very well at 1 mile. So I look for what the horse has done at 1 mile. Generally, when we're looking at those older horses, you have some type of a resume at that distance that you can refer back to versus having to try and speculate a little bit more with these 2-year-olds.
Nick says, if the Philly Mare turf is at 1 1/8, does more like Goddess get kind of screwed? Listen, she's shown that whenever Julian presses go, she goes. But I don't know. Maybe if the 1 1/8, you try 1.5 against the boys in Tarnawa. I don't know. Could be fun.
It's one of those situations where it's like, you don't try 1.5. Let's just put it that way. She's been good, but do you really want to run against Mischief, Tanawa, St. Mark's Billisco, Domestic Spending, Walton Street, Yabir, Gufo? Like, it's just that is a loaded freaking race. I mean, that's one where you kind of have to demand a price because there's so much talent in it.
You're going to need to save everything up for the end of Saturday night at Breeders' Cup weekend, because the turf into the Classic with the way these fields are looking, oh, so good. Mike, one last race to talk about, the Breeders' Cup winning. You're in for the Juvenile Turf. This was the Summer Stakes at Woodbine, Grade 1 race. Similar setup, similar result. You have a Godolphin, Charlie Appleby, Frankie Dettori horse that starts poorly, has to pretty much circle the field, wins for fun. That's Albar here. I didn't think this race was as impressive as the Phillies one. Still a good effort here. But the one burning question for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf, let's just say at the Breeders' Cup in general, over under 3.5 wins on the big weekend, we'll say big weekend, for Charlie Appleby and Frankie Dettori.
Together or total separated?
Yeah, you just got to split hairs, don't you?
Well, it's a legitimate question, because Dettori's not only going to ride Appleby horses, and Appleby's going to have a couple that aren't just Dettori.
My point is, they won with 3 horses together over the weekend. 3 Grade 1 races. Will each of them win 3.5 over under?
Under. And look, they're going to face tougher fields. Let's these were not world beaters here. The Breeders' Cup, you're going to face literally world beaters. That's what you get there. That's why you get a win in your program. So I think it's going to be tough for them jointly to combine to win 4 races. However, if you said I had each of them the I'd probably take over in that case then, because if I get two and they win with one of them, and you know, one wins over here, one's over here. So I think this is going to be a very formidable pair, especially with these 2 2-year-olds. But it's going to be tough to win 4 races there. We're going to have some fields, man. There are going to be some fields over there.
It's going to be exciting. I had 2 horses I wanted to stable up. One of them was one that you agreed on was going to be yours. So I will let you tell the folks at home why they need to care about Grafton Street, the 3-horse and the runner-up.
Yeah, it's going to be my stable up here. And I'm praying we get some type of a price back on Grafton Street next time out. I don't care where it is. I want this horse. Look, one of the things that you have to respect is when a trainer like Mark Cassie, who's 21% at Woodbine, throws a maiden into a grade one race like this, you just knew this horse was going to fire. And then you watch the race back and this horse looked absolutely loaded. This is a Son of Warfront out of a Galileo mare that was supposed to be on the turf first time out, ends up scratching off the turf. I mean, I thought this horse looked absolutely incredible and chased a very good horse home here. So Grafton Street for me is my stable up horse of the week. And I will be looking to bet this horse back pretty much anywhere I think it comes back. And if it does come back and is the favorite, it's a single for me in the sequence. And I'm going to hope we can find something around and be able to create some value.
Oh, Jason just showed up. He said, thanks. Congrats to Jason. You hit the pick 4 Saturday using Mike's ticket. So that was pretty good. I told Jason it's because I was wearing the Saratoga shirt on the Thursday show that he gave me, and it's the good luck charm. So I washed it. I had to wash it because it got some baby spit up on it. But I'm going to wear it again for I'm going to try to remember to wear it for this coming Thursday show. Regarding this horse, Grafton Street here, Mark Cassie compared this horse to War of Will. And here's how War of Will's career started. Debuts at Woodbine, gets third in the maiden special weight. Goes straight to the Summer Stakes, gets second as a maiden. 2 starts later, goes to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. Finishes fifth, had a pretty good effort. Next start, breaks his maiden in the slop at Churchill Downs. Off he goes to become the War of Will that we know and love. And he has said that this is his War of Will horse. So if you're, say you're in a Triple Crown Fantasy League and you're looking for a sneaky horse that isn't going to be a Woodbine specialist or a synthetic specialist that has done well before, maybe take a look at Grafton Street, see what happens.
I'm praying we get this horse back at 5-1. For some reason, like it goes to grade one and we catch a break. I'm not sure we will, but man, I would love a price on this horse at any level. Like, not even worried about graded stakes. Some of these, I put the caveat of, well, if they get moved too high, I'm not interested. This one, I think, was by far the second best horse in that race.
So this horse will get the Derby winner disqualified. Yes, Mark, good job. By the way, Mark is correct. I checked after I saw him post in the chat. The Breeders' Cup Preliminary Turf is going to be 11 furlongs this year. I remember in 2017, they came down the chute in the middle of the track. But they're going to start on the backstretch and go 3 turns. So that's going to help your Warlike Goddesses right there. She's going to have plenty of time to get that gear going. We'll end with what question here from Nick. What jockey will have the most turf wins on Breeders' Cup Day, Mike?
Ooh. I'm going to go Flavian Pratt.
You're damn right.
I'm gonna go with the home pick, not the homer pick like it would be for you. I'm going to go with the home pick and say he knows that turf course the best, ridden it enough, and we'll get quality mounts. That's the thing. Pratt will get European mounts. Pratt will get Brown mounts. Pratt will get the best California mounts. Pratt will get Miller mounts. I mean, he's the jockey that is pulling in the most unique plethora of mounts right now from all these different trainers and spaces. And so I think that gives an advantage on the day like Breeders' Cup.
What are you trying to say, that Flavian Pratt's a homer pick? You think he's the desktop photo on my computer or something?
Yeah, I mean, not a homer at all with my racehorse there.
I'm with you for all – you outlined great reasons. Also, Flavian Pratt two years ago, was the first jockey. It was the first time they ever had 14 races at the Breeders' Cup. He rode all 14 races at the Breeders' Cup. So he just puts himself in position to try and win as many races. Mark says Ricky would say Lescano. Yeah, Jose Lescano. That's, he would pick every David Donk horse. He's going to say it's going to be Donk, Lescano on the turf at the Breeders' Cup.
I will say Lescano found me a couple of prices over the weekend on the turf. So he actually rode very well for me. So I'm not going to be too mad. I'm not going to make too much fun of that. But that is definitely dead on. Man, Ricky loves him some Lescano in New York on the turf.
Yes, he does. Hey, listen, it works. We make fun of him for it. It's kind of like the Manny Franco in The Last Angle from Denonymous, man. It's silly, but it's stupid how often it works. That's going to do it for the horse racing portion of the show. So if you're just tuning in for that, you don't want to talk about football, thanks for joining us. We'll be back Thursday. We're going to be covering the Pennsylvania Derby Pick 4 sequence at Parks. The inside track to the Pennsylvania Derby wagering guide is being created as we speak. Aaron Halterman hard at work on that, so make sure you check that out at racingnews.com. But we'll see you on Thursday at 5:30 Eastern, 2:30 Pacific for that show. Mike, the 6-pack you started on week 1, pretty good. 4-2, good start, a couple of nice parlays. Week two, you said hold my beer. You went 4-2 again, but your honorable mentions, you went 6-0. So you went 10-2 if you played all of Mike Somich's picks. First of all, congratulations. Talk about it, and then let us know who you like in Monday Night Football.
Yeah, it was a fun weekend. Not gonna lie, did pretty good in the sports. I was really disappointed in Miami. If they stopped turning the ball over, I think that would have been a different final score with Michigan State. And Noah Fant, the other loss is over. He didn't get a target in the fourth quarter, so that kind of sucks too. But it was nice to be able to sweep everything else. Colorado was absolute laugher. We caught them as a +120 dog. They won 30-0, so that was always fun. Yeah, 30-0, never even close. So it was nice to get that done. And Alabama, who I've been preaching is the first half is the best bet in sports, improved their record to 22-5 in the last 27 this weekend, and then almost lost to Florida. It's unbelievable how dominant they are in the first half and how they just fall apart in the second half. And don't fall apart. They change their style. They slow down, and then it can get them in trouble in good close games, or they can just roll early, and then they don't care because they're up 28, 35 points. They just slow down. So Bama first half came through for us again. Yeah, it was nice to be able to get everything else out. So nice little 10-2 weekend and a nice start with the what is now 8-4 with the actual six pack picks.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, to go that because you can, especially in football, it's very volatile. You're gonna have a great week in like horse racing. The next weekend, it's like you don't even know what you're like. What sport am I betting on? So congrats to you. Monday Night Football, we got Detroit at Green Bay tonight. Mike talked about the poor soul whose life is going to be ruined when he misses out on $750,000 because the Lions lose at Green Bay instead of winning straight up. But over at racingnews.com, the sports section, racingnews.com/sports, you can find Mike Somich's six-pack every weekend when it comes out, highlighting his favorite bets for both the NCAA and the NFL. You can check out the Dudes Who Bet Sports podcast and live stream that Aaron Haltzman does with Papa Dude. I know that they had another great – well, Papa Dude had another great weekend. Aaron was very honest that he did not have the best betting weekend. But you check all of that out here along with the Dudes Who Bet Sports College Top 25 rankings. Lots of fun heading on over here. And then, Mike, let's talk about it. Detroit at Green Bay tonight, Monday Night Football. We know what we want to see happen because of chaos and because of that person's life-changing score. But Green Bay is minus 12. Is there a shot in hell for the Lions here?
I want to just bring this up real quick. Dr. Furanda, yes, UNLV is awful. They got rocked by Iowa State, who couldn't move the ball their first two games. So they're pretty bad. Look, man, doesn't this feel like a Aaron Rodgers FU game? I mean, everyone's talking shit about that performance last time. That performance in, where was it, Jacksonville against New Orleans, where they got shut out and absolutely rolled. I'm thinking shut out. They scored 7. But they got absolutely rolled. Now he goes home on a Monday night, a nationally televised game. You got to think that Brett Favre is going to have an FU game. Do they cover the number? I'm not sure. But there are some fun Brett Favre props. Like, will he
Aaron Rodgers?
I'm sorry, Aaron Rodgers props, whatever. I hate the Packers anyway. There's some fun Aaron Rodgers props here. You can have Aaron Rodgers scores a touchdown in both halves or throws for a touchdown in both halves, even money. Aaron Rodgers throws for 3 touchdowns and Devontae Adams catches 1, even money. Like both of those, I think those are both solid props. I like the Packers in the first half more than I like them in the game. So if you want to lay the 7 in the first half, I think that's a better bet than the 11.5 for the game. Packers are also 3.5-point favorites in the first quarter. I would lean Packers in the first quarter. I expect Green Bay to come out with their hair on fire and Rodgers to just try and put it to this terrible Lions team. And then, like, could totally see what happened last week with San Francisco and Detroit, where Detroit comes roaring back, covers the number, but never really has a chance to win the game. The other thing that you could do is that if you do like the Packers tonight and you think the Lions are going to get rolled, you can play a teaser from this game. You take the Packers, and you think you can get them down to like 4.5, something like that, and play it into next week where your Lions are on the board as 7.5-point dogs to the Baltimore Ravens. So you can get Baltimore -1 and the Packers -4 and just fade the Lions in both games. Why is that interesting? Because if the Lions get rolled in this game, guess who's not going to be a 7.5-point favorite come tomorrow morning, right? Like, yep. So that, I think, is a little bit interesting as well. So for me, I would be more on Roger props. I agree Devontae Adams probably going to go off. Early, I like the Packers. Late, I think it could get a little dicey. That's why 11.5 is an awful lot of points.
I'm really mad that the Dallas Cowboys won by exactly 3 points when that's the spread that I had on them. Wait, I jumped in when they were plus minus three, and was really hoping that they were going to be able to pull it out. But that half point edge, that's why that half point, like 2.5 is so key. 3.5 is terrible to try if you're fading the team or taking the points, I should say.
It's been interesting in the NFL the last couple of years since 2-point conversions and analytics have become more and more of a thing. We've seen less and less key numbers hit. So now there's like a key grouping. 2, 3, 4, and 5 are kind of grouped together now. That's why when you're doing teasers, it's really important to go down to 1 or to play money line parlays if you're giving more than 3 points, because there's missed. Like if you look at the Baltimore KC game, it was 35-30 at one point. Then it was 36-35. It would have been 38-36 at the end. You see that 2 through 5 number fall a lot more now because we have more 2-point conversion efforts. So if you're going to tease, to me, it's important to get down to 1.5 or less because that's a more safe area.
This is the on the screen here if you're watching live. This is the free pick analysis that Papa Dude puts together, and he does this for all sorts of football games. So if you're a football fan, if you want to get some free insight, and folks, I can't emphasize enough, this is free. Mike Somich's stuff, 10-4, free. Papa Dude's picks, free. Overreasons.com/sports on the main page. Sorry, 10-2. I'm sorry. I was thinking of your combined record, which would be 14-4.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to say. 14-4 sounds better. The Pennsylvania Derby's coming up this weekend. The fields have already been drawn. You can check all that out. My opinion, this is the deepest 3-year-old race since the Kentucky Derby we've seen. So it could be a lot of fun. Tune in on Thursday at 5:30 Eastern, 2:30 Pacific. Mike and I are going to go through the late pick 4 sequence at Parks, a track that I look at about once a year when it's this time of year. So we'll see how we're doing. Mike, anything you're looking forward for this week leading up to Thursday?
I actually degenerately play Parks in tournaments, so I know the track pretty well. Our boy Chris Griffin, who used to be down at Sam Houston, who did a wonderful job on the mic at Belmont this weekend,
yes, he did.
Calls for Parks. But all the tournaments on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday are usually – well, Monday and Tuesday for sure are all at Parks. So I have too much experience at Parks, and I'm not going to lie.
Well, okay, but that's a good thing. I mean, it's bad that you degenerate, you know, spending too much time at Parks in the middle of the week, but that also means – you actually are going to have some really great insights. So if you're looking to play Parks this weekend, even one race, make sure you tune in to us. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Curtis Kellard. He is at SumOfBomb18, number 8. Corporate Overlords at Race_Dudes. As I mentioned before, the inside track to the Pennsylvania Derby wagering guide is going to be available very soon at RacingNews.com. So check that out. We'll be back on Thursday with another excellent episode of the Magic Mike Show. Until then, I'm Magic.
And I'm Mike.
Good luck at Parks this weekend, you degenerate fools.
The Magic Mike Show, where you hear the experts speak. The Magic Mike Show, tune into the show every week. The Magic Mike Show, you can trust the show is the bomb, because it's being brought to you by RacingDudes.com.
Death, taxes, and Magic Mike on Monday.